Chapter 12. The Art School Adventure Begins. In mid-January 1966, my mother, who had come to Sydney to settle me into art school, returned to New Guinea and took her fancy Karmann Gear 1500S with her. From then on, I was without wheels in the big smoke. I was 17. I had already been accepted to study at the National Art School's North Sydney campus. The campus was easily accessible by public transport from my digs at Tremaine, the YWCA hostel in Kirribilli. The hostel wasn't far from Milsons Point Station, with electric trains going north to the art school, or south to the city, over the harbour bridge. At Tremaine, I shared a first-floor room with another young woman, but before long, the build-up of art-related clobber that was stored under my bed became unmanageable, making it difficult for both of us. My storage dilemma was noted, and before long I was offered a single room on the ground floor, that had once been the sick bay. I was overjoyed, as the room was close to all I needed, including the common room that was perfect for setting up my sewing machine, the TV room, the dining room, the basement laundry, and the wall-mounted payphone for making outgoing calls, that was located in the hall, just outside my door. All this, plus tucker for $13.50 per week. Perfect. Money-wise, I was unbelievably well off. I'd cash to burn, because my mother's considerable monthly maintenance payment, that was enough to support both of us in reasonable comfort, was passed over to me, hollis bollis. The reason? My father had got wind of my mother's well-paid job, establishing a textile industry in the highlands of New Guinea. The news didn't please him, but this unexpected turn of events certainly pleased me. I was excited at the prospect of art school. By way of background, the National Art School's North Sydney campus was one of a number of state-run facilities used for training first-year art students. It was housed in a cluster of rundown fibro and weatherboard buildings, with little aesthetic appeal, squished onto a very small block of land. We were expected to attend Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and we did so willingly, because the classes were so interesting. The study year comprised 3 terms. In each term we had 2 different subjects per day, one in the morning, and one in the afternoon. Subjects included lettering, design, outdoor sketching, drapery drawing, antique model drawing from plaster casts, perspective drawing, watercolor painting and sculpture and quick sketching, for which we each took turns to model. In 1966, the cost of attending one of the best art schools in the country was $12 per term, payable to the Department of Technical and Further Education. Each weekday morning, I walked up to Milsons Point Station. I had my Masonite drawing board, with large sheets of white cartridge paper attached, tucked awkwardly under my arm. Over my shoulder I carried a bag containing everything I needed for the classes, including pencils, paints and brushes. From Milsons Point, I took the train one stop north, then a bus, followed by a short walk to the art school complex. We were a diverse group of students. Those who'd completed the New South Wales school leaving certificate were either 17 or 18 years old, whilst others, who had passed the intermediate certificate, were only 15 or 16. As part of my application, I'd presented an unimpressive Queensland senior, that is, Year 12 certificate. Thankfully it was disregarded, because entry to the National Art School was contingent upon the quality of the artworks we each submitted for consideration. I quickly made friends within the student body. A number of my fellow students were self-funding their studies, by taking factory work, or whatever other work they could find, during the art school holidays. I clearly remember one story. A young woman who took a job in a pickle factory. Afterwards, she said she would never eat bought pickles again, because whatever fell on the floor was scraped up and put back into the pot. Her disturbing story has put me off buying commercially made pickles ever after. As my studies progressed, my design teacher invited me to her home for Saturday lunch. Trained in Switzerland, She brought with her an innovative approach to teaching design that we all loved. Naturally, her home was beautifully decorated, with exquisite hand-woven cushions and furnishings, Persian carpets and hand-embroidered table linen. I understand it was unusual for a student to receive an invitation to visit the home of a national art school teacher, and, to this day, I wonder why I'd been invited. Her son, about my age, was also at lunch. Perhaps there was a bit of matchmaking in the air? Or maybe she felt sorry for me, all alone in the big city. I guess I'll never know. For a while, my weekends were taken up sewing custom-made scrim curtains. Before returning to New Guinea, my mother had given me a second-hand Brother sewing machine. This was a heavy clunker that I was able to put to profitable use. For example, some ex-New Guinea friends had relocated to Sydney. They'd purchased a block of land, on which they'd built a Petit and Sevet project home. The home featured many full-length windows that required many sets of full-length curtains. I was happy to help as I love sewing and the extra money was handy too. I used the clunker to make my own clothes as well. I did my best to emulate Jackie Kennedy, the fashion icon of the era. For me, Jackie was the embodiment of sophisticated simplicity. To mimic her style, I chose to use Vogue designer patterns, following each step of the detailed pattern instructions, to the letter. The unexpected spin-off from my single-minded approach was that I learned lots of unusual garment construction tricks that I have drawn on ever since. Occasionally, I used some of my generous allowance to invest in stylish off-the-peg garments. The right accessories to complement these garments, and all the other outfits in my wardrobe, were vital. Shoes, with a matching handbag and gloves, were purchased from the upmarket David Jones department store in the city. One weekend, towards the end of my first term at art school, my classmate, Jenny Spence, died. She suffered from asthma. This was my first up-close and personal experience of death, and it threw me for a loop. Jenny had just begun dating Kirk Handsome, my boyfriend Paul Payton's best friend. We were devastated by the suddenness of her death, as she was loved by us all. With a heavy heart, I bought a suitably somber maroon outfit for the funeral, to be informed a day later that it was to be a family-only funeral. Sadly, Kirk, Paul, and I were unable to farewell our kind, gentle, and talented friend. As a result of Jenny's death, a pall of sadness hung over us all for the remainder of our first term at art school. The pall of sadness was momentarily lifted for me when I received an unexpected job offer. A fellow student had noted my interest, nay, my obsession with fashion, borne out by the quirky outfits I wore to art school each day. From our lunchtime chats, she was well aware of both my sewing skills and my strong background in textiles. It seems she had made mention of me to her mother, who was deeply involved in the Sydney fashion scene. I was invited to meet her mother. We discussed what she had in mind, and, the upshot was, a job offer. I was flattered to be asked, and quite surprised to discover that the skills I already possessed had value in the real world. However, I had set my heart on formal art training, so, after giving some considerable thought to the possibility of a career change, I politely declined her offer. I was very relieved when art school exams were done, as I was still in shock from Jenny's sudden departure, and itching to get away from it all. As a distraction, I focused on making a number of unusual outfits to take with me to New Guinea, for the May holidays. This time, I was headed to the small highlands township of Kundiawa, in the Simbu district, where my mother was overseeing the establishment of the wool project. As always, I was looking forward to pitching in. Easy for me, because I had been around spinning wheels and looms since before I was born. As the wool project was growing like Topsy, I knew an extra pair of experienced hands would be most welcome. At its zenith, my mother was managing 26 units throughout the highlands. After the fact, it's comforting to know that the spinning and weaving skills acquired by the people, as a result of their textile training, were in use long after my mother left the country, in 1973. But I'm getting ahead of myself. On reflection. The National Art School. In my first year at art school, my drawing, painting and sculpting skills were enhanced and refined. These foundation skills provided the bedrock of my subsequent career in the arts. They're the skills I would later combine with textiles and material culture to create a series of thematic touring exhibitions that tell our stories. Stories of both hardship and success. Grief. The sudden death of my friend Jenny Spence was a massive mind-numbing shock. I was bereft and found it difficult to cope with the vacuum Jenny's death created in my life. I had only once before experienced a similar, all-consuming shock. When my father left my mother and I was 9 years old. I had witnessed him beat my mother black and blue before he departed. However, I've come to understand that many children are conflicted when family life is disrupted. In my case, not by death but by withdrawal. I also know that many abandoned children feel responsible for family breakups, but not me. I was relieved my father was gone, as I didn't want to witness a repeat performance of his superior strength and anger, directed at my mother, or at me. Even though I had a strong connection with my father, I realized I couldn't trust him. Today, my mother could take out a domestic violence order against my father. However, this wasn't the case in Sydney in the late 1950s. Then, it was a time of deep dark family secrets, held close. In my family, the image my parents were keen to project to the world was one of educated, upper middle class respectability and domestic harmony. However, the reality was very different. Facts. Scrim. A reasonably priced, lightweight, translucent, woven textile, made from cotton, hemp or flax. Often used to make curtains for the trendy modernist-inspired houses that were the rage in late 1960s Sydney. Pettit and Sevett Builders. Brian Pettit and Ron Sevett were the rising stars of contemporary house design in 1960s Sydney. They were the builders of choice for many adventurous first home buyers who purchased blocks of land in the northern suburbs where new land releases proliferated. Pettit and Sevett began by commissioning the talents of Michael Dysart and Ken Woolley, the latter the 1967 winner of the Australian Institute of Architects Design Award. Later on, innovative house designs were provided by the heavy hitters of Australian architecture, including Harry Seidler, Russell Jack, Robin Boyd and Neil Clarahan. Pettit and Sevett built 3,500 houses for Australians between 1960 and the early 1970s.